LPD 1041.
Signal 10 assistance.
Inside the Squad, presented by the Lafayette Police Department. To serve and protect is not just a motto, it's our mission.
Sending another unit.
Step it up.
Welcome back inside the squad. On this episode, we have our dispatchers with us. We're going to talk about what our dispatchers do and how they play into the police department. We've got Dave Hughes and Amanda Brooks. Dave, I'll start with you if you want to introduce yourself and talk about what brought you to LPD and how you end up in the position you're in.
Well, Dave Hughes, I've been in communications now at LPD since December of 2016, so a little over 7 years. I suppose we want to talk about the first time I came here in 1996 when I, after I did 20 years in the patrol division at that point. Separated, went into the private entity for a little while, decided that wasn't going to work out for me, so I came back, and here we are again.
Glad you came back.
And Dave, thanks. I just want to mention your voice really quick. You have a very unique voice.
Yes. Yeah, that's me at the beginning of the podcast, I know.
Right. And you used to be in radio, is that correct?
I did that for a little while. Part-time, I never did it full-time. There's not enough stability in that for me to give that up and do something like that full-time. But part-time, I did it for about 20 years at a couple of radio stations around town. So that kind of, I guess, established a little notoriety anyway. It's kind of a blessing and a curse, I guess.
Right. Well, We're excited to have you back on
Thanks.
Here.
Thank you.
Amanda?
I've been with Lafayette since 2015. And from 2007 to 2015, I was at the Topeka County Sheriff's Office.
That's right. Forgot you did that. Mm-hmm. You did the same thing there, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So 16 years.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been on the night shift?
Since August.
Oh, so pretty new. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Right on.
Good.
So let's just begin this episode with a broad question. What is dispatch? What do you do?
Well, dispatch, I think that everybody views it as we take 911 calls. Mm-hmm. We answer the admin calls. There's so much more to it that people don't get to see. Yes, we do take the 911 calls. Yes, we do dispatch the help, the fire, the police. But we also do other things. We are the ones that run the people for the officers. We're the ones that enter those warrants into the system. We're the ones that look up all the information that the guys do need in a timely manner over the radio. We do a lot more than just answer a 911 call.
So most people do view dispatch just as you answer the call, you send someone there, and then you hang up, you're done with the call. Mm-hmm. But it's more than that. You're basically with them through the mm-hmm. entire call.
Correct.
Can you give us more detail
on
that?
Yeah, so, I dispatch an officer on a burglary call. I'm going to stick with that call. So I'm going to answer all of his radio traffic. Anything that he runs, I'm going to do. If he takes maybe a theft of an iPhone that was taken from the residence, I'm going to put that in the system. I'm going to fill out the paperwork for it, and then I'm going to file it. So, I stay with that call, and that's what we try to do is each dispatcher tries to stay with the call that they take. That way we don't have multiple hands touching it, but yeah.
So you're with the same call until it's finalized? You're not?
Yes.
Are you multitasking multiple calls at once?
We're doing multiple calls. Like, it's just not one call. Like, I'm going to be on this call, but I'm still going to take the next 911 call if I have to. If everybody's busy, I'm going to take the next call. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Or answer the next radio traffic.
And who else do you guys dispatch for? I know you do police, but Dave, who else you guys dispatch
for?
Well,
we also do the Lafayette Fire Department, too. They've got 7 stations here in town. Each of those has many have one, but most of them have 2 pieces of equipment in it, as well as their specialty teams. They have a dive team. They have a hazardous materials team. They have a tactical rescue team. All those are included in what we do with it, too, and that's of course, a day-to-day thing for us as well, too. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So what's it, because your nights and your days, is that mm-hmm. correct?
Right.
What's the biggest difference between the shifts as far as for a dispatcher?
I would say just coming from day shift to night shift, our call volume it's out insane on night shift. I feel like we get a lot more 911 calls than what I did on day shift. Other than that, just sleep.
Yeah.
Sleep is different.
Well,
on day shift, a lot of the calls that we field are administrative based. We'll have people call in here. Hey, I need to talk to Lieutenant Hartman about something, or can I talk to somebody in records? I need a copy of a police report. We get a lot of that. We get a lot more of that, obviously, than they do on the night shift. But as far as 911 calls and everything are concerned, I would think the numbers are comparable. I've not had a lot of experience working night shift, but I know with the town getting bigger and busier that everything's starting to, it's kind of starting to equal out just a little bit. It's there's no question this place is vastly different than it was.
Nights is when like a lot more of your couples get home, and so arguments start, and kids are getting out of school, so maybe some bickering, fighting starts. Runaways, and then obviously your overnights is when you're going to get your thefts and your car break-ins and stuff like that.
Right. Because statistically, crime does happen more often at night and after dark. So is there a different mindset that you guys go in or train for, nights versus days?
It's the same.
Yeah, not so much in dispatch. I mean, in law enforcement out on the street, yeah, absolutely. But not for what we do, really.
It's going to be the same around.
Yeah, just always prepared.
So talk to us, how do your guys' shifts work?
We have four different shifts. They all start at 6 o'clock, whether it's a.m. or p.m. We label our shifts just like the patrol division does. They work 12-hour shifts, we work 12-hour shifts. They have the red shift, composed of a day shift and a night shift, and a blue shift composed of a day shift and a night shift. So four different groups of officers. We do the same thing. We have four different groups of people in radio that are assigned to those shifts. I work the red day shift. Amanda works the blue night shift. We bump into each other a couple of times a week at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's about it. She's going on days off just when I'm coming back to work. But we keep a minimum of four people in the room at all times. We've got room in here now in the new place for up to eight, the way it's set up. Staffing and things of that nature vary just a little bit, but it's a consistent group of people each time you come in. Everybody has an opportunity to pick and choose their shift. There are those who have chosen to go work with Amanda on blue nights. There are others who have chosen to stay on day shift and end up on the red day shift with me.
So having a dispatch shift with a corresponding patrol shift out on the streets, what's the relationship between dispatch and police officers? Do you get pretty tight and get to know each other?
I mean, we get to know each other. I wouldn't say, like, we're going to hang out on our days off or anything like that. Like, no, but when we're here, I mean, we have to learn to get along. We have to learn to work together. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are a team. I know some people, guys, like, you're two separate things. You're a dispatcher, you're an officer. Yes, we are, but at the same time, like, we're trying to complete one goal, like, one thing. So, I don't know, I tell my people, like, treat them the way that you want to be treated. I know that they can be frustrating, we can be frustrating, but we all have the same goal, and that's to help people, so.
Yeah. And I think it's important to mention, I think a good reason for that is what people don't realize. Dispatchers are under an equal amount of stress as our officers because we're not getting where we're going and handling the calls we're handling without the information we're getting from dispatch. So you guys are the ones on the phone dealing with the people screaming and yelling, trying to calm them down, trying to get us information. So over the years, I would say that, like, the relationship between dispatch and patrol has always been good. I just think when stress is introduced, it maybe changes that dynamic a little bit. But I think here at LPD, we're very fortunate in the relationships that we have with our dispatch and our patrol.
Yeah, and there's been a couple, it can sound like the guys might be snapping at you on the radio. And there's been a couple that will send a message, hey, like, if I sounded like I was yelling, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to. Yeah. And that's, like, we appreciate that because some do take it personal. I personally do not take it personal. I'm like, whatever, like, go about your day. Like, what? It doesn't bother me. But some do. They're like, oh, my gosh, he just yelled at me. It's not a big deal. But we do appreciate when they apologize, and same for us. We'll tell them, hey, didn't mean to sound crappy.
Yeah, I'm sure tensions can run high because no one calls 911 when they're having a good day. You know, it's always a stressful situation.
It's 100% true.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about the technology piece. So if you guys can talk, a little bit about what you use in the dispatch center, and how did that change coming from the old building to the new building? Was there new technology introduced? What do you want to touch on that?
night and day.
Literally, because of the light.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We stood outside and watched storms and everything. We never got to see that before because we didn't have windows. Last November, I believe, we switched over from a long-standing computerized dispatch system that we had into a new company called Axon CAD. Axon is also the same people that provide the body cameras and the car cameras and things of that nature. So their technology was already here, but now they've moved in a new computer-assisted dispatching program with us too. There were some growing pains, no question. Over and above what we had before, which was not insufficient by any stretch. This is a different program that allows us to do a few different things. Plus, it's integrated with the car cameras, the record system, and everything else. So now we have, instead of having to go several different places for technology, we have it all basically in one spot, and it's made it a lot simpler for us to kind of be able to keep track of the guys. The body cameras that they wear now have a GPS function to them. So we can see not just where an officer's car is, but we can see where that officer is. Wow. So if he is in dire need of help and for whatever reason can't communicate with us on a radio, we can look and find his body camera and know right where he is. So that's something that to me anyway has come in very, very handy. I look at it maybe from a little different standpoint than a lot of other folks in dispatch do for the simple reason that I was there. Mm-hmm. I was out in it for 20 years. The body camera evolution is something that came along right around the tail end of my law enforcement career. So I wasn't real well versed in it, but now that we have that and now that we have the ability to keep that much closer eye on where these guys are has been an incredible, mm-hmm. incredible difference.
Yeah. So you guys have 5 monitors at every station, correct?
Yeah.
What are all of the programs that you use on that? Do you basically have access to like every single camera, GPS? What else?
Yes. Yeah, so one is going to be set up for our radios and strictly radios, and the other is going to be set up for our phone. We have the big monitor in the middle that we can put whatever we want on there, our CAD system. And then we have the 2 side monitors that sit above our phone and our radio. And you can kind of adjust and put whatever you want on there, your system-wise. Some people like to keep, you know, their cameras on one. Maybe their other systems that we run off of on the other. Mm-hmm. And then their main CAD system in the middle. It's more of a personal preference how you want to set it up.
How many programs in total is that?
That we run?
Yes.
We have a lot. So, because usually when you open up your programs, it can all stay within like the Google. So you just click on your different tabs.
Okay.
So like for instance, mine, I'm going to have my CAD system is going to be on my main screen. Mm. I'll have my cameras on one. I haven't had an operating screen on my system for a while because it's been down. So I've just been using the 2. But then on my Google, I'll have, you know, my records, my Texty open and Texty for 911. And then I'll have, you know, my Flock, whatever else. Oh, Heimdall. I'll have all the other stuff open. That way I can just click and go to it when I need it.
Mm-hmm. I open up 14 different apps every morning when I come into work.
Oh, wow. There's a lot to open. I'm sure I'm forgetting some. Oh, yeah. IDAX.
Yeah.
Important one.
So for a dispatcher, you know, you're obviously you're the first point of contact with people calling in. So talk about the training aspect of it. Like, you know, you guys have to be able to provide information. You know, if somebody needs to do CPR, if they need to, you know, if they got to provide other sorts of life-saving measures. Is this knowledge you just keep? Do you have something that you use that you can flip to and read to them? Like, what kind of training and how does all that work
so
out?
We recently just switched from APCO to PowerPhone for our emergency medical dispatch. So each dispatcher, when they come in, they're going to get trained in emergency medical dispatch through PowerPhone. And at each desk, we keep what's called a flip chart. And they can go down, they can find what they need, whether it's CPR, CPR on a child, an overdose. They can flip to that, and it'll walk them through the questions they need to ask, the help they need to send. And then, obviously, they're going to have shift partners there that's going to help them as well. We just don't leave you hanging. Like, we all pitch in to help. So.
When someone is hired, how long do they have to train before they're
It can take anywhere from 6 months to a year. It just depends on how fast they pick up, how they progress, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is the toughest part for a new hire to grasp? What, if you know, when you talk about hiring them and them getting out on their own, what's mm-hmm. what's usually that part that is the holdup or the toughest part for them to figure out as a dispatcher?
I would think a lot of it is just getting the experience. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, we talked about the emergency medical dispatching. Now, Amanda's an EMD trainer, so when they come in and do, when they're ready for that segment of their training, she takes care of that. So that's an in-house thing that we can do. We do CPR certifications along with the folks from patrol division. So the more in-house training. But the biggest issue I think they face is getting the experience that they need to understand, yes, I can do this job. Yes, I'm comfortable with this. Yes, I can make the correct decisions. Because we could sit here for 12 hours and not so much anymore, but we wouldn't get what's commonly referred to as the hot call. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't get the, you know, burglary in progress or anything of that nature, because it's not something that happens every day. Mm-hmm. So if a trainee is in a position where there's a period of time where those high stress calls don't happen, we have to be able to evaluate at that point whether or not this person is really ready to be cut loose in training, because they haven't been there and done that yet. Mm-hmm. So once we get a few of those under them, we get people that are mm-hmm. able to evaluate what's going on and go, yeah, good, you're ready to go. Here you go. Here's your shift. Mm-hmm. Have a great career. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's probably one of the biggest issues, is actually having them sit through or work through different high-stress cases like that, or high-stress phone calls.
I'm training a new one right now, and she's been put through a couple of them, and she's handled them very well, but she had her first missing endangered. She had her first shooting a couple weeks ago, and, you know, she just looked at me, and, you know, she, do I tone this? And I'm like, yep. And then, you know, she just did exactly what we've talked about, like mm-hmm. how to handle it, and she's been picking it up really, really fast. But a good example for someone that is getting out of the training program, and a lot of them don't get those hot calls. They don't get the calls that I kind of feel like a normal call now for us, like a shooting or robbery. I just feel like those are so normal, which is sad to say, but it's normal for us. Antonia, one of our other coworkers, first time on her own, and she got two robberies back to back. And she didn't have them in training. So
wow.
You know, that's a prime example. You might not get it in training, but when you're on your own, you have to know how to handle it.
Yeah. And the other side of that is we've got the support system mm-hmm. in place with the other people yeah. that are on the shift too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So let's pretend for a moment you're a new dispatcher and you just got this armed robbery in progress call. You're not doing this by yourself. Mm-hmm. Everybody Correct. Else in the room is going to give you a hand with this.
How do you guys alert the other people in the room that if you need help or if you're stuck?
That's the thing, is we don't really have to alert each other. Yeah. Like, we will drop that tone, and all of our ears just, you know, we start zoning into what they're putting out. And if we hear, you know, armed robbery, not breathing, stabbing, like, we're jumping on, we'll get this, we'll get that. And we're all like hollering out, I'll get medics, I'll get fire. And like, we just start taking over.
That's probably one of the first things I noticed about dispatch. When I go in there, you guys are in pretty close quarters, and you're always talking, hollering at each other.
Were you able to see our old room by chance?
I was, yes.
Okay. We were kind of shoulder to shoulder in that room. So this and the new facility?
We have space.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It is. The radio system that we use has three separate tones for different functions that we can use on it. We use one for law enforcement stuff and one for fire stuff. We have a third tone that we don't use. Mm-hmm. Anytime we hear that solid tone on a law enforcement channel, everybody locks in on the radio. And that's the idea, that's the purpose mm-hmm. behind it. Get your attention, because mm-hmm. something's coming that you need to know about right away. And we're in the same boat. When we hear that tone in radio, mm-hmm. everybody just locks on and we're ready to go to work. Mm-hmm. So
let me ask real quick while we're talking about radios and such. So jurisdictionally, are you guys scanning sheriff's department, state mm-hmm. police? Are you guys, so we're always in tune with mm-hmm. what's going on and with surrounding agencies, mm-hmm. and I assume they're Correct. Scanning us as well?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. You know, the agencies here in Tippecanoe County are all in the same radio system. The state police are on a different system, but there is some interchangeability mm-hmm. in there to where we can listen to what they're doing. So we essentially can keep in contact with any police officer in the county.
That's good.
And how does that work with different agencies? When someone calls 911, how are they calling, you know, Lafayette Dispatch versus West Lafayette Dispatch?
So it just kind of depends on where the tower, whatever tower they're hitting off of. If it's a phase one, phase two, majority anytime we're going to, anymore, we're going to have phase two. Usually when they're hitting up down on Second Street, it's a hit and miss. It's either going to be ours or it's coming from Brown Street on the west side. So usually we just have to ask them, you know, where they're at and transfer, or if we take the call if it's ours. But yeah, it just depends on what tower they're going to hit off of.
Can we take this on a personal level real quick? Is there a certain call or instance that you guys are most proud of on how you handled it or how someone else on your team handled it?
We get a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot. We have a number of missing endangered child calls, which to my knowledge, all in the last 7 years have been successfully resolved. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it is a kid who got on the wrong school bus on the first day of school and ended up on the wrong side of town. Could be something like somebody who didn't come home from school. Mm-hmm. But the missing endangered part is usually either age-related or some sort of special needs-related. That's an evaluation that we make, and we determine how we're going to do this. Is this a 15-year-old who just didn't want to listen to mom and dad anymore and ran away? Or is this a 10-year-old who got out someplace, got lost, and can't find her way home? Two completely different circumstances. The missing endangered portion of the thing, we've done several of those. They've all been successful, and that's probably one of the highlights, I guess, for lack of a better term, is the fact that every one of those has come to a successful close.
Yeah, that's awesome. Let's take one of those for instance. So can you walk me through your role as a dispatcher? Like who calls you and where do you take it from there?
So usually it's the parents that are calling. If they're 12 and under, that's a missing endangered, and that's what the tone that he was talking about. We drop that tone and everybody listens. Mm-hmm. Then from there, we start dispatching units. Usually everybody will start jumping on that call. We get a description and last where they are last seen, maybe who they were with, possible destination, and we let them know. Once we put that out and they're with the parents, they're starting to look, we're kind of at a standstill. Like, so we start taking other calls, but we're waiting to hear, okay, try to see if you can find, you know, John Doe that hangs out with him. He lives on this street. So then we'll start digging through our system to see if we can find that kid's name, maybe that lives on, you know, South 4th Street. And then maybe send units to the house to see if the child's there.
So as a dispatcher, you collect all of that information, the details. Mm-hmm. You don't just send an officer to the house to do that.
And that's why a lot of people get frustrated with us, because they're like, quit asking questions, just send somebody. Well, I'm going to, but I need all these questions answered, because they need to know what they're looking for, who they're looking for, and what area they're going to go look for. And I know a lot of people are very, you know, high energy at that point. Their adrenaline's going, so they don't want to answer any more questions. They just want to see a police officer in front of them, and I get that. And so I have to reason with them, like, this is why I need, and I do try to explain, this is why I need you to answer these questions, because these guys need these answers before they get there.
I had a question. We were talking about toning out, things of that nature, and I think, you know, the perception from people who probably haven't seen the system we use is kind of like what you see in TV and movie shows, everything's dispatched over the radio, right? But that's not really how we operate. So talk a little bit about how we send calls to officers without using the radio.
Well, we talked about the CAD system, computer-assisted dispatch. We can take information into that, all the information that we get from callers. Essentially, the same thing officers are going to want to talk about, but our most important one is where. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't know where, we're not going to be able to help. If we know where, we can get whatever you need. That's not a problem. So that's generally the first question we ask. If somebody says, "I just had a auto accident," okay, where are you? I'm at let's say 18th and South. Okay. Several other questions down the road. Is anybody injured? How many cars are involved? Are you able to drive them? Do you need tow trucks? A lot of the things that go along with that. And there's not a specific set of questions, but there is commonality between the questions that we ask in any given circumstance. We talked, we're just discussing the missing children thing. How old is he? How tall is he? What was he wearing the last time you saw him? Does he have a backpack? Where does he go to school? What bus does he ride? Just all the questions that we're going to ask, information that we need to better assist the guys that are going to actually take care of this call. Much of what we do in calls for service, non-emergent issues, is just information that's entered into our system and then transmitted directly to a laptop that's in a police car, to the officer that we might choose to assign to this call. Let's say it's somebody wants to report theft of a FedEx package off their front porch. Not emergent by any stretch, but it still is something that needs to be taken care of. We'll put the information into the CAD system, send it off to this officer who happens to be working in that zone, and he takes care of the investigation of it. None of that goes over the radio.
But I will say, like, my shift, they're getting better about just picking calls up. So officers can actually put themselves on the call and go to it. So there's a lot of times, like, a noise complaint, animal, a barking dog, like, they will just inside themselves go to it, and we don't even have to worry about it. We just put it in holding, and they take it.
So you generate the call.
Mm-hmm.
If we're busy, it gets moved to holding, and then somebody, when they're not busy, can just grab that and go take the call.
Yeah, so not everything we put in there gets immediately assigned. Right. It can be left for, you know, however long it needs to be in the event something more pressing comes up that needs to be done first.
So when we talk about people calling in when they need things, they're providing me information, they're getting us going in the right direction. Are you guys trained to, like, conduct an interview with them at all, or are you strictly just gathering the information the officer needs?
We're gathering the information that the officer needs, but at the same time, I guess, not that it's an interview, but we're listening. So I'm going to use Jackie, for example. Jackie had a 911 open line. She called it back, and a guy answered, and he's like, no, everything's fine, like, you know, blah, blah. And then she could hear a female in the background, but it was faint. But then she thought she heard the female say, help. And the guy's like, no, like, we're all fine. It was just an accidental dial. Well, she went ahead and put the call in, and with her talking to that guy and distracting him just a little bit, it gave that female enough time to get out of the residence. And it was actually a battery. So, I mean, yeah, we're collecting the information, but at the same time, we're trying to listen for anything that might be going on in the background that can help with that call.
So does dispatch assist in collecting evidence for cases? Like, how reliable is someone who's calling you hysterical? Like, do you guys ever use that in cases?
We went to a class called Is the Caller the Killer? It's a two-day class. Excellent class. But this guy, he teaches you how to kind of decipher whether the caller is telling the truth or if they're not telling the truth. And he actually gives us, like, a checklist that we can go by. Obviously, it's not easy by any means. But you can, like, listen for key points. Like, are they hysterical? Like, if they're calling in a stabbing, like, are they hysterical about it? Are they giving you the correct information? Have they went back on their word multiple times on things that they've said? So those are things that we try to listen for, especially the ones that have went to that class. Like, we have learned a lot from that. So we try to listen for, like, key points. And then we can say, well, you know, they didn't say that, or he wasn't emotional on the phone. And actually, we had that not too long ago, a couple years ago in Cambridge. The female that stabbed her boyfriend and called because she came home and was like, oh, she was very hysterical, and then she would stop crying, and then she'd get hysterical again and stop crying, and come to find out it was her that did it.
Mm. Ooh. Mm-hmm. So you guys are like human lie detectors.
Somewhat.
Try to be. We don't have the eyes that the police have, obviously, out in the field looking at the stuff, but we have the ears, and we do so much of it that when something like that, you hear something like that, that's kind of a little red flag or something in the back of your mind says, that's probably something these guys need to know about. Yeah. So
that's our next podcast episode.
Yeah.
Seeing if you guys can detect a lie.
Hook them up.
So jokes aside, though, so when you sense the caller is telling a lie, do you inform the officer about that, or do you just stay facts?
Well, personally, myself, I will note the difference. Like, maybe they said this at the beginning, now they're saying this. I'll note it, but I will also relay that information to them. Mm-hmm. Because the more information they have, then the more they have to go off of. Right. I don't want them to be blindsided by something when they get there. If we know it, I mean, we need to tell them. That way they know what they're walking into.
Yeah. I got kind of a two-part question, just out of curiosity. So you guys have the difficult job if officers responding to maybe a shooting in progress. Mm-hmm. You know you're sending that officer into an incredibly dangerous situation. What is it like on your end being in that dispatch center, knowing you're sending people into that type of environment?
It's nerve-wracking for us. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, we definitely get that adrenaline like that the officers get. Like, we are hyped up now. We're sitting there on the edge of our seats like, okay, but we're trying to do our best to make sure they have everything that they need going into this.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how I look at it.
If we've done our job correctly, mm-hmm. they are as safe as they can be mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. they have all the information that they need to make informed judgment on how they want to handle the call.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. And the second part of my question was, and this, I don't know that the public recognizes this, you know, when we deal with difficult cases that involve children, mm-hmm. sometimes children that die in unfortunate mm-hmm. circumstances, and that can take a toll on the officer. But speak to how do you guys deal with that as dispatchers? What resources does the police department provide to you to help handle those situations?
So they do offer. We do have a therapist that we can go see if we need to. Me personally, I kind of find my own outlet, workout. Obviously, when I leave here, I'm able to shut my brain off. Mm-hmm. I'm able to shut that down and not take it home with me. Now, I'm not going to say there are some calls that will haunt me, and there are some that still do to this day, and I feel like that's kind of normal for mm-hmm. people in first, you know, that are first responders, police officers, firefighters, EMTs. But I've just been able to, I guess, train my brain that when I leave here, it's just something that I'm able to shut that down and go about my life outside of here.
Yeah.
But when I am in that state to where I think about something a lot that's happened here, I find it easier for me just to go to the gym, mm-hmm. you know, go to the gym, go for a walk, you know, and then I'm good to go. But some people
probably
do.
Different for everybody.
Yeah, it is different for everybody because there are some that do, mm-hmm. you know, therapy once or twice a week, you know, go talk to a therapist or they go talk to somebody. But yeah, everybody handles it differently and I definitely handle it differently.
And Dave, you've seen it from both sides.
Yeah.
From when you work the street to as dispatch. So has it changed mm-hmm. for you? I mean, how you feel before, during, and after those calls?
It does to some extent. I mean, like Amanda said, there has to be a work life separation. You have your job to do, but you also have your time off. We are blessed here at the police department that we have sufficient time away from work to just be able to decompress and then come back and do the job that you need to do. Yeah, I mean, it's no secret to anybody in here. She works out. It's no secret to anybody else that knows me from around here for the last 27 years. My therapy's on two wheels. I get on my motorcycle and go ride for a little bit. You know, wintertime, a little difficult, but it's coming up before too long where I'm able to just, you know, go maybe just a 20, 25-mile ride. It's all good. Mm-hmm. Decompress a little bit, come back home, and it's all set. Dr. Dardeen, who is the therapist that works with the police department, has an immense amount of experience with first responders. And she knows a lot about what goes through their minds, not just because of her training and her experience, but she was a first responder at one point. So mm-hmm. she can put two and two together and help people get over this. There's no reason whatsoever to have to continue to deal with this if you can't find some type of coping mechanism. She works out, I write.
Yeah.
And that's how it works.
To each their own, right? Yeah.
So let's dive into the numbers real quick. I have the calls from 2022 and 2023. So in 2022, 48,478 911 calls and 62,208 calls for service. Now that number increased by a couple thousand in both categories for 2023. So what advice do you have for the public? When should they be calling you? When should they be making reports online?
Well, first, if your phone has a battery, even though you don't have service, it's going to call 911. So please do not let your children play with that because that is the majority of our 911 open lines is you have kids on the phone that are just playing. They're playing with mom and dad's old phone. As long as it has battery life, they can still dial 911. Yeah, you'll get kids on there, and that's pretty much what it is. And we know what it is because it comes up as a 911 only number. And so that means that that phone doesn't have service. So, granted, now some of the callers that do call off 911 might just have, that's all they have, like a phone that runs off Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And they might have an emergency or they just want to talk to an officer, but that's the only way that they can call.
Yeah, so I also want to offer some advice to the public. I heard that if you have an extra call or an extra phone, donate it to a women's shelter or someone who could need to make an emergency phone call, but they don't have access to
a
phone.
Yeah, the YWCA takes them, and then our victim's advocate, Nora Ashcroft, would be a good one to get a phone to.
Yeah.
Online reports is a thing. I know a lot of people will get frustrated with us when we're like, oh, you can report that online. It just cuts down the calls that we're putting in for units to run to because they're already running to a lot of calls at night. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a suspect, if it's under $750, you can go on line and report it.
Yeah.
And just to add a little bit to that, I don't really even know if this is a sentence, but don't ever not call.
Correct.
If you have a question, you can call us. We'll be more than happy to talk with you about it. It's possible you could get referred to online reporting. And then looking at it from the citizen's point of view, if you can go online and and it qualifies for online reporting through our website, you don't have to wait 2 hours or more to get a police officer over to take your report. Mm-hmm. You can get it done now and everything's taken
care
of.
You're still going to need a case number.
It does cut down on the call load that the officers have, but it also cuts down on the amount of time that the general public might need to wait for somebody to actually come over to take their complaint when it's something that can be done in just a few minutes online.
Yeah, because, you know, whatever they need to report, stolen or maybe a lost ID or whatever that it is that they're wanting to report, they might be waiting for 5-6 hours, especially if we have, you know, a major call that went out, an accident, you know, PI accident, a shooting, missing child. Like, they're going to be waiting a little bit because that call goes down to the bottom.
Yeah. And for our listeners, that website they're referring to is LafayettePolice.us. So please use that or definitely call if it's an emergency.
Yeah. Yeah. As I said, you call us. And if it comes down to the point where we can help you get this done quickly by doing an online report, we'd be happy to do that. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Then that way you don't have to wait, perhaps, like Amanda said, it could be an extended period of time.
We've walked people through. Like, we've logged in ourselves and told them, you know, where to go, what to click on. And, we're more than happy to walk you through it. It's going to decrease the call volume for our officers that are already running call to call. And it's going to help you report it and go to bed sooner, especially on night shift.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of interest in people wanting to apply to the Lafayette Police Department, but don't necessarily want to be a sworn officer. So I refer them to dispatch. Mm-hmm. Are you guys hiring right now?
Yeah, we've got three openings. I think I'm not quite sure when the next application cycle is in effect. It may be right now.
I think I see Amber send an email. I think it might be.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, applications are on Lafayette 4. It's in like the number 4. No, wait. It's work4lafayette.com. So, yeah, apply there.
Before we get into questions, I had a question that maybe it's just a hypothetical. It doesn't ever happen. But so if there's only 3 or 4 of you working and we have 3 or 4 911 calls, what happens if other 911 calls are coming in and everybody's tied up? Where do those go?
They roll over to either the sheriff's office, West Lafayette, or Purdue.
And that's the same for them. So if they're all tied up, they'll roll over to you guys. And then how do you know the difference in, do they just have the location wrong or could they just, nobody answered at the other dispatch center? How do you know?
We won't know where they go until we start asking the questions or, again, Axon, our new system. I'm enjoying it, but there are some things that we haven't got figured out yet. But in our old system, we could see like where it hit up on our map. We can't see that yet. So we'll ask them, you know, where are you? You know, can you tell us where you're at? And if they're, you know, we're on campus, okay. And maybe it's something I already heard Purdue put out or I heard West Lafayette put out. I'll let them know, like, you know, West Lafayette has already dispatched out. I will let them know that you called as well, and I'll take their information and I just pass it on to them if they're not involved. If they're involved, I'll try to get it to West Lafayette or Purdue and let them know, hey, you have somebody that's involved.
But what if it got kicked over to you guys because they were busy we wouldn't just kick it right back to them, would we? So that's
So
there's a way to tell that they tried to get through to the appropriate.
If I can hear, for instance, West Lafayette had a big fight down at the Cactus a couple weekends ago, and their calls rolled over to us. Well, I already knew that they were going. I already knew that the units were there, so I was able to let that person know, like, you know, they're already en route. They've already put it out. I'll let them know that you called. Or some of them we just sent over, and if they didn't answer, then I just told them that I would let West Lafayette know.
That's
that they
what
called.
I was curious about.
Yeah.
Okay. Our telephone display also shows us on our telephone screen. It shows us the location where the caller is calling 911 from. So if something comes to us, but the screen shows us that they're way out on the Hoosier Heartland, or they're at 26 and 900 East, or 52 and 800 South, and we're getting a call, that means it rolled over through county and it came to us. Mm-hmm. So that's another option we have to take a look at and say, well, that tower is not in our jurisdiction. Yeah. Where are we getting the call?
Gotcha.
That's why.
So now's the part of the show where we go over viewer questions. You want to do the first one?
All right. Our first question. How often do you get butt dials?
Often.
Yeah.
I'm guilty.
I'd say on average, throughout a shift, half a dozen.
Mm-hmm. Really?
In a 12-hour shift, it's not at all uncommon to get open line calls. We refer to them as pocket dials, but it's the same sort of thing. Open line 911 calls half a dozen times a shift, maybe.
My issue is the iPhone. I don't know exactly which buttons call 911, but I always seem to press it.
It's the if you hold the side button, like
the
if it's in your
button.
Pocket, if you hold it, I believe that's what it'll light up the screen. Then if somehow you brush it, it'll call.
And I've been a little bit removed from patrol for a few years now, but I assume we still, even if it's sent off a tower, would we still send officers to check or no?
So no, our policy is if there's no sign of distress, no sign of disturbance, we call it back, no one answers, we'll leave a voicemail. If I search that number in our system and show that we've had multiple 911 open lines or they've done it before, then, and we can send them a text as well, like, hey, your phone dialed 911, do you have an emergency? If they say no, usually they'll respond back on text majority of the time. So we can just document that, clear it out. Now, if I put that number in and I see, oh, we were just there 2 days ago for a domestic. Okay, I'm going to send somebody to the address to just do a triple bean for a 911 open line. But
so real quick, we didn't cover the aspect of texting.
I was going to say the same thing.
People can text 911.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
In what circumstances do you recommend texting versus calling?
If they can't talk, as in they're in a situation where maybe there's a suspect or someone they can't talk around, I would highly suggest 911. Other than that, I mean, they can call us. I prefer them to call us, but if they absolutely cannot speak, then I think 911 would be sufficient.
Is
sufficient.
Is the texting relatively quick as far as from a communication standpoint? When they send it to you guys, you send it back, it's pretty
and
quick.
And ours is keyboard, correct. Like it's all through the computer, so obviously a lot of us can type a lot quicker than we can actually text on a phone, so it comes back a lot quicker.
Does that come into the dispatch center different than a 911 call? It does.
Yeah, it comes in. Basically, it's another app that we have to log into another site.
Okay.
And the nice thing about it, though, is we can. I feel personally that it pinpoints a better address location than what our actual 911 does.
It's able to give us a similar GPS reading to what we get off of cell phones, but it tends to be a little bit more accurate, and it displays a map. This shows us roughly where the phone is, and more often than not, it's within 50 feet or so.
It's pretty close. It's,
dang. And that's just 911. I just put 911 in my phone, and I could just send a text message.
Yeah.
That's simple.
Mm-hmm. Can they also text the non-emergency number?
No.
Just
an emergency.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, next up. How do you handle verbal abuse? Not in the office, like on a phone call.
Well, the important thing number one is don't take it personally.
Exactly.
The reason that this person is so upset has absolutely nothing to do with you. It has to do with the circumstances that they might be in at that particular point, something that occurred to them that has just essentially disrupted their whole world. Now, you talked earlier about nobody ever calls 911 because they're having a good day. Mm. This is similar to that. Mm-hmm. You just can't take it personally. Yes, it does kind of rub you the wrong way now and again, and it does kind of make you think, now what did I do to deserve this? But nothing. You didn't do anything. This person, for whatever reason, is just having a rough go of it, and it's up to us to be able to, if we can't help them over that hump, we at least need to understand why they called and what we can do to try to help them out.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it is difficult. There's no question, but and it's not, it shouldn't, it's not something you should take personally because it wasn't anything we did. It's a product of their circumstance.
Mm-hmm. And all of your lines are recorded, correct?
Every one of them. Yeah.
And those are, how far back can we go to get those? How long are they stored? Do we know?
I think it's 7 or 10 years.
I think it's at least 7 years. It's not quite infinite, but yeah, we can get way back and get them.
Good. We talked about you guys having opening spots, and I think this is kind of what this question's hinting at is, if I were interested in becoming a dispatcher, what kind of requirements must I fulfill in order to apply? How old do I have to be? Do I have to have an education? What are some of those things?
So you have to be 18 years or older. Education, I mean, I believe that is a high school diploma that they do require.
GED, yeah. GS. Diploma or equivalent.
Training. You'll get all your training through us. We do all the training.
The hiring process itself involves a test. It's a standardized dispatch test. Hundreds of police departments across the country use it. And it's about a, what's it take, 2.5-3 hours maybe to get through
it? I think it's about two hours,
Everybody who sits for the exam is evaluated after that. If you, it's basically a pass-fail exam. If you pass, then you're on to the next step with background checks, lie detector tests, things of that nature, interviews with the shift leads and our center supervisor, Katie, always involved in those too. And then once decisions are made about the hiring, once all those requirements have been met and you get hired in, then as Amanda said, it's all in-house training from there.
But you kind of, the way I try to explain to people is you're going to go through everything that an officer goes through, just not the physical part. You're going to do the testing, you're going to do the polygraph, you're going to do everything that an officer is required to do when they go on the road. You're just not doing the physical part.
Okay. Can I call 911 anonymously?
You can call 911 and be anonymous, but you cannot call 911 anonymously, like as in trying to block your phone number. No.
The phone display on 911 will always give us the phone number that's calling, with the exception of if it's the 911 only phone, that's a computer-generated number that we can't call back. Basically, so if you're calling from a 911 only phone, it's just going to give us that certain number, and that's the end of it. That number will not be used again by a different phone anyway, but yeah, we can't call those back. But it always gives us cell phone, landline, wherever it's coming from.
Okay. I'm thinking maybe this one might be like a tip for crime. And if you want to...
That's our WeTip hotline.
Yeah,
right, so it's WeTip.com.
I mean, we do get people who are like, oh, well, you know, I don't want to be involved. Well, that's fine, but I still need to document, you know, your name, your phone number. And that's something I don't think some people quite understand is when you call 911, you say you don't want to be involved. I still have your phone number. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to put your phone number in there. So if the officer calls you, like, that's, you're not going to be anonymous.
No, there are times people will call us on the business lines, on the non-emergency lines, and they're able to set their phone to anonymous, and then they don't give us any other information after that. Fine. Yeah. If you choose to remain anonymous, we'll be more than happy to honor that. We're still going to act on the information you gave us.
And usually our information, like when we ask for your name and your phone number in a 911 call, it's not to put it out over the radio. It's just so if the officer has any follow-up questions, they can call you.
That's going to be what I was going to touch on is a lot of times they'll put in the note, at least from what I remember, caller wishes to remain anonymous. Mm-hmm. And what that tells me is if I need to talk to them, I know how to get a hold of them. But it's just telling me don't go tell whoever I'm dealing with that this was the person that called. So we do try to protect that as much as we can. And like Amanda said, it's more for us as the officers responding. If we need to reach out to them, we have that information. But we definitely do our best to try to keep, you know, the anonymous piece there if that's what they've requested. So,
and there are times they flatly refuse, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. That's fine. That's absolutely their right to do that. We'll not debate it at all.
Mm-hmm. One more.
We're going to put you guys on the spot with this one.
Ooh.
Amanda, we'll let you go first. What was your first rookie mistake when you first became a dispatcher?
Oh.
Maybe not your first, but one you remember.
Well, I got to hang on here. Because I honestly don't remember. I would have to say it was probably when I was at the sheriff's office, and it wasn't necessarily me cursing on the radio, but I did not unkey as I was talking on the phone. And so I dispatched and I didn't unkey and I was saying she. And as I said shh, and then I unkeyed. And yeah, Lieutenant Coney thought I was cussing on the radio and he wasn't too happy with me. Good thing my partners had my back. But
that's funny you say that because anytime there's an open mic and you never know who it is, you're just hoping you're not that guy because you're like, oh no, I have no idea what I've been saying the last 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah. Is that pretty common out there?
It happens. I mean,
and so,
it does.
It's an empty feeling.
If we unplug like our plugins for our radios and they don't get pushed and all the way, people will have an open mic, or if they push the button on the handheld, it'll stick and they don't realize it and they just walk around, da da da, and we're like, you know, we're waving our hands, screaming. Yeah.
And then officers, like, I remember I put my seatbelt on and it would, the belt part was hitting my radio and keying it up, and I had no idea. Mm-hmm. So I was having conversations, they're like, open mic, and finally it's like, oh, that's me. It's such a horrible feeling. Just hoping you weren't talking about stuff you shouldn't have been, I guess. I don't know. Dave, what about you? One of your first mistakes you made that sticks out.
Well, after I came back, let's flash back to 20 years in patrol. It was a little different world out on the street back in the mid-90s when I first started here. And after I left, retired, and came back into dispatch, I guess I had a little flashback. I took a call from a mom one day who was a little frustrated with her 10-year-old child, because he wouldn't get out of bed and wouldn't get dressed and wouldn't go to school. And reflexively and incorrectly now, I know, I said, well, it sounds to me like he just needs his butt whipped. I was still in training in dispatch at that point, and our supervisor, Katie, was my trainer at that point. And she just looked across the console at me from the space next door and shook her head and said, no. No, we don't do that. Okay, well, my apologies.
You'd be canceled today.
Yeah, it certainly was the wrong thing to do, but it went back to I guess I kind of hearkened back a little bit to, you know, corporal punishment. I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to share with us about dispatch?
No, I don't think so. Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
this was fun.
Yeah, thank you.
So we're actually going to release this episode during Dispatch Week in April
16th? 14th through the 20th, I think, this year, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I just want to say thank you for everything you guys do. I know it can be difficult because you're just the voice, not just the voice, but it can be perceived as the voice behind the phone. Mm-hmm. But you guys are people. It's a very difficult job. I definitely couldn't do it. So just really appreciate everything you guys do.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks. I got a little too old to be out on the street, so I came in here, and I'm still having just as much fun.
All right. Well, again, thanks for joining us today. As MK said, and I'll echo those same sentiments, that from an officer standpoint, you know, you guys are kind of our lifeline there. And I think that can be easily noticed at times. But I know that everybody out there appreciates you guys and what you do and getting us where we got to go and the information we got to have and keeping us safe and getting us home at night. And that wouldn't be possible without the work that all of our dispatchers do. And you guys do a tremendous job. So
thank you
for that. MK, we'll be back again. I'm not even sure what our next episode is. What is our next episode? True crime? Are we looking at true crime?
Announced. We're looking towards true crime.
All right. We're trying to pull together true crime. That was a popular one. So stay tuned. Hopefully we can come back with another true crime episode. But for now, Inside the Squad's 10:42.